So this is just proof that talking about books is literally therapy.
Welcome to Book Talk Etc., a podcast bound to grow your TBR. I'm Tina.
And I'm Renee.
And this is a conversational podcast about books and more from two Midwest mood readers who are easily distracted by new releases. And this week, me, Renee, and our new co-host, Hannah, will be talking about our latest reads.
If you enjoy listening, we'd love for you to follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. And if you have a minute, please consider leaving us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or sharing us on social media. All of this truly helps other book lovers find us. Hey, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, welcome, Hannah.
I am so excited to be recording with both of you today.
You know, this is so fun. We've got the equipment set up. We are looking at each other. It's always fun when we're recording with more than one other person. I'm like trying to look all over my screen here. I'm very excited to do our first official. Hannah and I recorded a quick teaser just to practice, but this is our first official episode.
Yeah, it feels like book club. Having all of us together.
Yes.
Yeah, it kind of is. It kind of will be, especially since we're talking about our latest reads. And at first I was like, I have limited notes. Uh-huh. And then I started making notes about one of my books. And then I was like, stop it. Because you know me and I can keep on going, but I'm very excited about one of my books today. What do you ladies feel about yours?
I have a good one, and then I have a really good one. But I think my really good one is only going to be really good for people who read like me. And I'll explain.
Okay.
It's not one that I'm widely recommending, but people that love this type of storytelling will love it.
Yeah. I have similar books to bring as well. I have one that I think has a more universal audience that I really loved, and then another one that is a little bit more niche that I enjoyed, but that might be hard to widely recommend.
Mm-hmm. So. Hannah, did you bring two books that you just recently read, or did you grab from your, you know, backlist?
These are recent reads. I read these both within the last month.
Cool. Okay. So I think before we get into things, Hannah, if you would like to, let's have you introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yeah. So I am Hannah. I am also a Midwest mood reader. I live in Michigan. I have been talking about books on the internet since 2015. I've been following Tina for a really long time, and I've really been enjoying following Renee since the podcast. I'm really excited to have a new avenue and a new space to geek out about books.
And it really is different. I mean, how many more ways do we need to talk about books online? Clearly many.
All of the ways.
I know. All of the ways.
Absolutely.
So we'll dive into this episode as we usually do. We typically start with our loving latelys. Hannah, did you bring a loving lately?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So my loving lately is a stationery item for all of my journal, stationery nerds out there. I have been really enjoying Ritec pens. I found them on TikTok when I was searching for really good annotation materials because I've been annotating a lot of my books lately. They actually have a really fun TikTok presence. Their videos are just really satisfying to watch. Their pens have a variety of options. They have a diverse style with their pens and their highlighters depending on your practical or sensory needs. So a lot of their highlighters, it'll be the same colors, but they'll provide them in different shapes. Like they have kind of some short and chunky ones. They have clickable highlighters. They have ones that are a little like longer. Anyway, so I love that they provide different styles depending on what you like to hold in your hand, because I feel like that matters when you're, you know, holding a pen. I really like their color options with both their pens and their highlighters. And then they have a really robust pigment, but it doesn't bleed in books, which is obviously important with highlighting. So yeah, I've really been enjoying their products, and that is Ritec.
I am furiously Googling because I'm always in need of a good journal or annotation product, but I'm like, you know, what point size do I like? What grip do I like? Like, I feel like I would need to do some research because I'm not sure what I prefer. I know it when I feel it, though. You know, it's one of those things.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people who annotate like the 0.38 or the 0.3 because it's really, really fine. But I tend to, like, my handwriting changes depending on the point size. And I really hate the way my handwriting looks when I'm writing in 0.3 or 0.38. So I prefer the 0.5, and Ritech has 0.5 and then 0.7 as well. So
nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that R Y T E C?
That is W R I T E C H.
W R I.
Like, right.
I was so wrong on that.
Okay. And then tech, like technology. Yeah.
That's actually a clever name. I misspelled it too at first. But yeah, I'm like on their little website. I'm like, okay, this is going to be, I have plenty of highlighters and pens, but like maybe I need more.
You can never have too many pens, that Tina. True. That I truly believe that. Yes.
My husband doesn't believe especially
it's like really my husband more? Likes to take mine. Like, same. And I have really special favorite pens, and he inevitably will take it. I mean, we have 50 more around the house, but I want that particular pen.
Right. Oh, I get it.
It's the
one.
Oh,
I get it.
I know Lily always takes, my kid always takes mine, and she, John, sorry, you're distracting me. He goes, I was just planning on taking Tina's. Yeah. My kid always, I just bought these highlighters, and I was trying to explain to her why a highlighter is different than a marker. And she was just like, it's pink though. And I'm like, right, but I need it for books. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
That's, how would you explain? It's see-through.
It's see-through. Versus, I was like, you don't really color with them. But yeah. Anyway, I actually am going to go next because my loving lately goes in line with journal annotation. And I thought this could be something that would make a great gift for book lovers. So my loving lately is the Poete scented bookmarks. Now, I'm a gal that just grabs whatever's closest to me. It could be anything, a receipt. I mean, it does not matter. But I had these sent to me a while ago, and I had them in this nice jar next to my desk. I'm like, why don't I actually use, you know, a bookmark? And I really like them. The company is a fragrance company based in the U.S., France, and New Zealand, and they make a ton of products. So these are scented. They smell subtly of perfume. And you wouldn't think that that's something you necessarily need. And of course you don't, but it's very satisfying. They have a journal. They have like a perfume, like a clothing spritz, they call it, candles, scented thank you cards, and more. And they have 7 different scents with French names that I'm not going to try and pronounce, but my favorite is the Lumiere. It smelled really good. And I love that they use high quality ingredients. They were talking about there's something like 3,000 banned ingredients that they make sure are not in their products, which I love, and then makes me nervous about what's in everything else that doesn't take that into consideration. These were $6 for 6 bookmarks, which I think is a great price. And again, would make a good stocking stuffer or gift for somebody in your life that is a reader. And it's a little different. I thought these were delightful, and I would love this as a gift myself. So these are the scented bookmarks from the company Poete. That's P-O-E-T-E. I don't know if I'm saying it right. Probably not, but that's okay.
Thank you for the spelling.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I'm going to round out the loving latelys with an entire podcast. Now, I know I've read an episode of this particular podcast before, but I'm bringing the whole podcast now because I just love it. It's the Mel Robbins podcast. And if you have not started listening to Mel Robbins, just give her a try. I don't necessarily listen to every episode, but I really, truly enjoy what she's putting out there. So I want to specifically highlight one of her recent episodes where I think it's actually one of like the most recent. By the time this episode drops, it'll probably be last week's episode, where she talks about this free workbook that she is providing. Now, you go to melrobbins.com/make-it-happen. She is very into goal setting and helping others to set goals. This is a 28-page free workbook. You can print it or you can download it. And along with the workbook is 2 free video trainings that she's going to be doing. I believe it's like 90 minutes of video training with her, where I'm not exactly sure. She's basically going to help you with the filling out of the workbook and setting goals. And I don't know. I just downloaded it. You do have to provide your email address mm-hmm. in order to download the workbook, but I don't know. I don't care. Her focus is on helping people get clear about what it is you want and who can't benefit from that. I mean, her energy is high, so I don't know. Maybe she's not for everyone, but for me, I enjoy listening to her because I find her very passionate and authentic. So I really enjoy her. And she's writing a book. I think she said her book was coming out this fall about the let them theory, which is what I brought, which is what I talked about. She's writing a whole book on the let them theory. I cannot wait. I feel like I'm embracing that in midlife.
Yeah, good.
Totally. So this one is the Mel Robbins podcast.
Oh, I like that. And I love a good download. I'm on so many email lists and like certainly what's one more, especially if I'm going to get something that I'd find useful.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I like that it's focused on figuring out what it is you want, right? And like making it simple so that you can take steps toward achieving your goals instead of just being like, I want to be successful. Okay. You know, what right. do we mean?
Well, she's also taken in the information from really smart people, psychologists, you know, other experts, and she's putting that together in the workbook. You know, it's not all just whatever she believes. Do you know what I mean? I feel like there's some science-backed goal setting in there.
When I was looking up her podcast, Brené Brown came up quite a bit. It looks like they've mm-hmm. had some conversations together. Would you compare the two of them in terms of like the work that they do?
I think so. I think Brené Brown is a little more theory-based.
Okay.
She's not quite as encouraging as I think Mel Robbins is and more universal. Yeah. If I was going to pick which one I was going to listen to and I could only pick one, it would be Mel Robbins over Brené Brown. Yeah. I just really like her. I really like what she's putting out there and the way it comes across. Not that I don't like Brené Brown, but I mean, mm-hmm. I don't currently download her episodes, Brené Brown. So I guess that says something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like Brené Brown's more of an academic. And I've seen her actually read one of her books. I really like her philosophy. And I mm-hmm. need to look into Mel Robbins. You've brought her before. And I know that I've just been like, yeah, that sounds good and something I would like. And I've forgotten. So good. I'm glad you brought that back and brought back the podcast.
Yes.
We love a new podcast to listen to.
I mean, why not? We all have tons of stuff to listen to. But
yeah. Hannah, are you a big podcast listener?
Depends on the season. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll go through phases where I just marathon a podcast, especially if it's true crime story or a serialized podcast in general. But then I'll go through months where I don't listen to anything but book podcasts. Book mm-hmm. podcasts I do keep up with pretty much on a weekly basis.
I'm sort of the same way. I don't listen to them that often. Oftentimes I'm listening to a book, but sometimes I get in a hole where I'm like, oh my gosh, especially if it's like true crime or serialized ones, but then it feels like research because I'm like, oh, I could maybe bring this to the show.
Right.
Which mm-hmm. I don't need a reason to just enjoy something, but like my brain sometimes tells me I do. So mm-hmm.
when you recommended Scamanda, I devoured that.
So good. You devoured it?
I devoured it.
Did you really?
I know I did.
Oh my gosh. So for book talk today, we thought it would be fun if we checked in with an update on our reading year so far. And my question that I have for both of you is, what has been working for you so far this reading year? And where are you at with your reading?
Well, I have read 24 books this year, which is a little bit lower than normal. I actually made it a goal this year to read a little bit less. I think I read exactly 100 books last year. And I think that I'm going to lower that this year to closer to 80, which might not seem like a big difference to some people, but it just allows me to do other things that I enjoy doing. So I guess that's been what's working. It's allowed my husband and I to do some things together in the evenings and I don't feel guilty about not reading. So honestly, giving myself that freedom has been working really well. In terms of the kinds of books that I've been enjoying, I'm typically all over the place in general. I read, you know, all different kinds of genres. But this year, I have been leaning back into historical fiction, which is what I used to read a lot of before I became like a public reader. And it's been really nice to get back to my roots a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I like what you said about being a public reader, because I would certainly consider myself to be one. And it's never something I defined before, but I am. Meaning what I assume you mean, what I mean when I hear public reader is we share our book reviews. We're talking to the public. And sometimes it can be hard to really, what I do when I'm picking books is try very hard to just read what I want to without being influenced by what's buzzy, what I think people will want to hear. But I certainly do find myself thinking, I'm kind of mediocre on this book. Should I bring it to the show? Will people want to hear about it?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I think being a public reader definitely can change your reading habits, you know, more so than it would be if you weren't sharing those reviews.
Definitely.
I agree. Hannah, do you use Goodreads or the StoryGraph? How do you track your books?
Yeah. So I use the StoryGraph throughout the year, and then I have a spreadsheet that I use. I've experimented with using physical journals and things like that, and I just don't keep up with them, just like I don't keep up with a regular journal. I just struggle a little bit more with pen and paper when it comes to tracking things. But yeah, so I use the StoryGraph, and then I use my own spreadsheet that I have made to track my reading as I am reading throughout the year. But every year in December, I do add all of the books that I have read to Goodreads, because that was what I used to track my reading back in the day, and I've never missed one of their challenges. Mm-hmm. So I'm committed to keeping up with the Goodreads challenge, even though I don't use that to actually track my reading throughout the year.
Got it. So it's not real time. You're adding your books in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. Yeah. I'm similar. I still like to put my books in Goodreads, even though I try and do it monthly. I'm behind. But I too, like you, started a physical journal this year, a book journal. I wanted to try it. I was very excited about it. I still am excited about it. In a perfect world, I'd be like, great, I finished this book. Where's my journal? Write my notes, you know, and I'd have the two side by side. Rarely does it happen. Half the time I can't find my damn journal. It's upstairs, downstairs, like in a backpack. And so what has been working for me is the Bookmori app. So it's this just an app on my phone. I always put in kind of real time when I am reading. And I like that they have a calendar. So it can show you when you finish a book, it'll show you on your monthly calendar the cover. So I can see, okay, I've finished 4 books so far in April. So for me, what's been working is the Bookmori app. It's right there on my phone, because oftentimes I am reading on my phone or listening. And then when I finish a book, eventually I'll get over to my book journal and make the notes over there. Now, why I need it in multiple formats, I could not tell you, but something about it, you know, I'm committed to really trying to keep this journal throughout the year. So that's been something that's been working for me, but same thing. It's hard for me to keep up with things in a physical format, even though liking the idea of them.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am using the StoryGraph, and I have not returned to Goodreads, and I have let it go, and I don't miss it, honestly. So the StoryGraph is, and it gave me some really interesting information about where I am in this quarter. Most of my reading so far this year, I've read 35 books. Last year at this time, I had read 36, so I'm on point. My moods are falling into emotional versus last year at this time, it was mysterious. Mm-hmm. And I totally can see that. The genre that is high for me as of this time right now is literary. Ooh. Which that tracks, because I knew before I looked at the statistics that I have not been reading as many thrillers. Like I felt like I missed them a little bit. And now that's why. Mm-hmm. But I've been loving literary. So literary is my highest, thriller is my second genre, and contemporary is my, no, I take that back, literary, thriller, and then mystery. So my top two moods are emotional and reflective, which also tracks. Yeah. And yeah, and so but otherwise I'm on point. I have the exact same number of 5-star reads, which 9, exact same number as I had this time last year.
Oh, that's fun. And I love that.
Isn't that crazy?
I love that StoryGraphs gives you the opportunity to compare stats.
Well, I have that. I have the StoryGraph Plus. And mm-hmm. so you can quickly and easily compare years really fast. And yeah, I just popped up last year's, the first quarter of last year, and compared it. And I'm not surprised, but I am a little bit. So yeah, that's where I'm at right now. Everything else is basically the same. So I would say I'm on track to continue with literary, and I will probably be diving back into thriller, especially as we near summer, because I love thrillers in the summer. I think last year I remember saying that I didn't feel like thrillers hit me like they used to. And I was just kind of like, eh, they were okay. But anyway, we'll see how this summer goes.
I like that you really got granular with it.
I did. Well, you know me, once I started, I was like, what else can this tell me?
Yeah, no, that's super fun. I actually wanted to give a shout out to the StoryGraph for me too. That's been really working for me. I have read 33 books so far this year. And what I like about it is their personalized recommendation feature. So it is so interesting. They have this, and it's for Plus users, but basically you can go in there if you're looking for a book to read. It gives you the option to search, and you can search using your own TBR list or whatever. But I would just hit explore and then the advanced search. One of the options is, what are you in the mood for? Books with a similar theme / feel to, and you can select up to three. And I just typed in books. Last time I typed in Migrations by Charlotte McConaghy. This time I don't know what inspired me to do this, but I typed in Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. And it spit out a very good recommendation that I'm bringing later on. So I'm really pumped about it. And that one's my 5-star read. So I'm loving that feature. It like, I just... So far, they're 2 for 2, and they led me to 2 books that I highly recommend. So I'm very pleased with them. So 33 so far, it's been really good. I have had some thrillers that I've rated 5-star. Typically, I don't rate thrillers 5-stars, but boy, I've had some really good ones. But also what's been working is backlist. Backlist has been working well for me. I've had 3 5-star off the top of my head that were backlist. And I think last year, you know me, if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, I hardly ever read backlist for no real reason other than I genuinely get too excited about the buzzy new books. But I am very much enjoying my balance this year. I am tempted to do Kelly Hook Read Books, her Battle of the Backlist. I'm sorry, her Battle of the Backburners. We can link to that PDF because just this... If there's one thing about me, if there's a challenge or some sort of graph, I'm going to fill it out and get excited about it and then probably forget about it. So, but I like to set it up. You know, it's a fun thing to do. So really, so far, so good. I don't know specifics about where I'm at with ratings. I can tell you, I know I've read a lot of 5-star. I've read some highly recommend and then some clinkers. So moving forward, hopefully I'll try and read fewer books that I would not recommend, but sometimes it's hard. You don't know that until the end.
Right, you don't. And people do want to hear about some books that don't work for you. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing one today.
Oh,
which I think many people will like, actually. So I'm excited to bring it. I have a question for you, Hannah. Do you know where you stand so far with new releases versus backlist?
So I have read 14 backlist books. I have read 7 books published in 2024. I've read 66% backlist and around 33% frontlist titles.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Is that pretty typical for how you read?
I read more frontlist typically.
Yeah.
But I'm also really happy with that for this year because I really wanted to read from my own shelves this year. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, that required me to read or requires me to read backlist books. And so far, I'm doing really well with that goal. I've read almost 67% of my books have been from my own TBR, and then like 30% have been review copies from publishers. So I'm really, really happy with that statistic.
That's really good.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Has that stopped me from buying more books? Absolutely not. It has not. No.
Why would it? I mean, truly.
But at least I'm reading them.
Okay, I have a question. What are you looking for in the next quarter of your reading? Is there anything you want to change, a little adjust? What do you hope? So when you both come back and talk about your mid-year books or whatever, what do you hope to have done differently, or are you going to stay the course?
I do want to read more frontlist titles. I'd love to get it to about 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm pretty happy with where I've been reading. I think trying to, you know, if I know that it's going to be a middle of the road, not feel so bound to, oh gosh, but I need a book for the show, try and recognize those things a little bit earlier. Something else I'm keeping track of in my journal is diversity statistics. And I've been doing pretty well on reading authors of color, but I would like to increase more queer books. I've read like one or two LGBT books, and I'm like, that's not enough. I want to have some more diversity in different ways when I check in, you know, mid-year. But yeah, I've been finding some winners for me, which is exciting. Although I couldn't tell you what my favorite book of the year is yet.
Mm. Could you, Hannah?
Gosh, I stink at like coming up with stuff. Whenever someone's like, what are you currently reading? I'm like, let me check my app.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you.
I did really enjoy The Women by Kristen Hannah. Mm-hmm. And then one of the books that I'm bringing today is a book that I feel like has the potential to make it into my top five.
Ooh. What's your favorite so far, Renee?
Probably my top, probably Father of the Rain by Lily King. If I had to absolutely only pick one, I would probably pick that. I have not forgotten about that book, which was, I believe I read that in February. But man, I've read some good thrillers too. Like you said, I've given five stars to a couple thrillers already. Kill for Me, Kill for You by Steve Cavanaugh was so much fun. But I think, yes, I'd have to go with Father of the Rain, followed, I don't know, if I took thrillers out of it, it'd be probably followed by Leaving by Roxana Robinson.
Yes, I can't wait to read that one. All right, I'll play fair since you guys answered. If I'm choosing right now in this moment, James Percival Everett Standing on Top for a new release and backlist, It's a Place for Us by Fatima Farsan Mirza.
Yeah. Okay.
I loved both of those. Like, I don't see myself forgetting either anytime soon. And now I'm getting stressed out thinking of my top 10 list. It's only April. Relax.
Gosh, right. I cannot wait to read James and A Place for Us, both of them. Well, A Place for Us has been on my TBR for a really long time. And James, I'm really excited to read about and talk about with my mom. My mom is a literature and English teacher, and Huckleberry Finn is a book that she has taught in class many times. And she was so excited to read James. And so I'm excited to read that and talk about it with my mom.
That'd be so fun. What a good reading experience. I will say I don't remember Huckleberry Finn if I did read it, and I still loved it. So, but I bet I would have gotten maybe more out of it had I just knew the high level. I think I Wikipedia'd it, and then I felt like I had enough.
I also looked at my reading log, and I am going to change my answer. Well, not change my answer, but add on to my answer. The Frozen River by Ariel Lahan. So, so, so good. Again, I'm getting back to my historical fiction roots, and I'm really enjoying it.
Good. Well, embrace that. Do what feels
got
right.
To.
What I've been embracing are books that have no plot. Love a book with no plot, just vibes and characters. That's me. That's what I need. But let's get into our books. Hannah, would you like to go first?
Sure. So my first book is The Berry Pickers by Amanda Peters. This is an emotional family story about a Mi'kmaq family whose summer of blueberry picking in Maine is shattered by the disappearance of their youngest daughter. After this pivotal incident, years of haunting mystery and trauma unfold in their family. This is a dual point of view novel that also follows a girl from a seemingly unconnected, affluent family grappling with strange memories and an overall strange family dynamic. The search for truth and the power of love span decades in this really, really stunning debut. I really loved this book. I have been looking for more family novels that gave me that same feeling that Hello Beautiful did last year, and this one delivered. I have read a lot of mediocre family stories this year, and I was so happy to finally read one that stood out. Although some of the mysteries in the novel became pretty obvious very early on, this doesn't take away from the overall emotional impact of the story. I thought that this book was a really powerful exploration of personal and inherited trauma, family secrets, and the impact of historical events on Indigenous communities. I listened to this one on audio, and I highly recommend that format if you are an audiobook listener. My only point of criticism is that I wish the book had made more of a point to flesh out its themes. I can't say more without spoiling, but I felt that for a book that very clearly had a big socio-political conversation woven into its plot, it was pretty glossed over, and a lot of grace was given for something that I felt should have had a higher gravity consequence and impact on its characters.
Ooh.
And that was The Berry Pickers by Amanda Peters.
I am curious. I love when people review books and they're like, I can't say more. And they give you just enough because I'm like, well, now I want to know. I want to be in on the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good review.
Well, you'll have to read it and find out.
Do you know if it's a celebrity book club pick?
I didn't see the sticker on my book, but I don't know that for a fact.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah, that was a good review, Hannah. I had this on my radar. That sounds good though. Missing people are something that I like reading about. And that sounds like it was a bit different.
Yes, it definitely was. I think that you would like this one, Renee.
Okay.
It's got really good ratings too on Goodreads, which, you know, we take with a grain of salt, but it's got it's 4.18 with 48,000 ratings. And it just came out last April. So that's pretty high. God, did it come out last April?
That is pretty high.
I feel like it's a new release.
Yeah.
I guess not.
And I love that it has such high ratings too from coming from a smaller publisher. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Catapult, I believe it's a book published by Catapult, and I don't know if they're considered an independent publisher, but I know that they're smaller. They're not in mm-hmm. the big five. So I mm-hmm. always love seeing good quality books coming from smaller pubs.
Yeah, agreed.
Right. Yes.
Good call out.
I will go next. All right. I'm going to start with the one that I'm middle of the road on. I know a lot of people are going to like this if they haven't already read it. So it is May Luna by Kelly McNeil. Now, I had heard of this, but then it fell off my radar. It was a January Amazon first read. And I get those and sometimes I pass them by. And man, I'll tell you why I am forever drawn to certain aspects of a story like this. So also, this is available for Kindle Unlimited as well. So this story, which is billed as a bittersweet love story, the story opens with Evie Waters reflecting about life and marriage after the funeral of her husband. And in the opening pages, we're also introduced to her two grown children. Now, while staying with her after the funeral, her children discover an iconic photo in an old magazine, and the photo is of a mystery girl with renowned musician Carter Willis. I mean, think huge, big, big musician. And that mystery girl was their mother. And then they start talking and reminiscing, and she decides that now's the time that she, I believe, had promised her husband that at some point she would tell her kids the truth about her background. So the story starts, she basically starts reminiscing, and then the story will shift back to the time, the summer of her 25th birthday. And during that summer, she was a young reporter just trying to get a foot in the door, and that foot in the door involved a backstage pass, a very long shot interview with this band, and the lead singer, who was Carter Willis. And when that connection happened and she was approved for the interview, a cosmic connection with him began. I am not a huge music person. I thought of you when I was also reading this, Tina. Because we talk about this, Hannah, I don't know if you're big into music. It is hit or miss for me. On the other episode, the book that Tina and I were trying to figure out was Songs in Ursa Major. That book worked for me. The Idea of You worked for me by Robin Lee. I am continually trying to find another idea of you. From this was not it. Although, I mean, I keep searching. And that's why this, you know, that's why I picked this up, even though I'm not a huge music person. But Colton Gentry's third act also recently worked for me. So the way that this is structured is after those initial couple chapters, which I really loved. I love those opening chapters. If I would have had the print book, I would have been highlighting. There was a lot of reflection on life and marriage and parenting grown children and that sort of thing. Loved it. Then it goes back in time. It stays back there for a long time. But the way that the story is written, we know, like, I was aware of the fact that she was telling her children this story, even though it was set back in time. And there was some sort of disconnect with that. There was a huge disconnect for me as far as the connection. There is a lot of music. It's 90s music, like classic 90s rock. If that's your thing, you might love this. I ended up landing in the middle of the road. While the story had its moments of warmth and poignancy, overall, it left me wanting a lot. There are some very strong reactions to this story on Goodreads. If you don't want to know anything about it, do not go and read any Goodreads reviews until after you're done with the story. I appreciated the blend of romance and emotional complexity, but really for me, there ended up being too much angst and too much telling instead of showing for this to leave any sort of lasting impression. I do think if you love Daisy Jones and the Six, this might be for you. I did not like Daisy Jones and the Six, so it tracks for me. But this is May Luna by Kelly McNeil.
That's right. I always forget that you didn't like Daisy Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think this could be a winner for people who liked Daisy Jones, for sure.
It's funny that do you both not love books centered around music?
I don't, for sure. Renee, okay. Can dabble.
Well, I'm hit or miss. I can dabble. And I continue to look for the idea of you, another idea of you sort of romance. But I don't mind it. I will take music over food. Over like the food. If it's heavy on food writing, that's usually not for me.
So funny.
Were you going to say something about do you like music books?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, do you have a preference?
Well, I'm like, how much time do we have? No, my dad is a musician and my mom is also, and we grew up around music. All of my extracurricular classes I took in college were on music theory and all that fun stuff. And I love books that have a musical element just because that's a big personal part of my life. But I also love foodie fiction. Mm. So, you know, just bring in a dynamic element here.
No, that's true. And I don't know anything about music, although I do like the 90s music. So I'm like, I wonder if that would work for me specifically. My extracurricular classes, like my electives, were all anatomy and physiology and organic chem, because I wanted to go to physical therapy school anyway, it's a whole thing. But I took no fun classes is what I'm trying to say, including no English courses, even though those would have been my favorite. I was trying to force a career that I wasn't ultimately cut out for. Renee, I did Google, or I searched May Luna in Goodreads, and the reviews are pretty funny. Pardon my language, but F this book.
Oh, I'm telling you.
I hate this book. And, I hate this book. People, 5 stars. Like, okay. So
people have some strong opinions.
I like strong opinions. I do. I will say I enjoy that. All right. I don't have a strong opinion about this book that I'm going to bring next. It's called A Great Country by Shilpi Somaya Gowda. And it's new. This one came out not too long ago. I think came out in April or March, but it's contemporary fiction set in present day in Pacific Hills, California. That is a fictional city. It's a gated community with ocean views, well-tended lawns, serene pools, and is the recent home of the Shah family. The Shah parents came to America 20 years earlier with little more than an education and their new marriage, and their move represents the culmination of years of hard work and dreaming for their children born and raised in America, success is not so simple. And for the most part, they're a happy family. They have these minor irritants, minor arguments between the parents and children and the siblings. But one Saturday night, the 12-year-old son is arrested. And they had she has a fantastic opening sentence. It's basically, it says, while 12-year-old AJ was getting arrested, his parents were at a dinner party. Like a really, really good setup. And the whole story is what happens from that arrest. And it explores success. It explores what is the cost of ambition. And I thought it was strong. I liked this book. There are four parts to it. And like I said, part one is about the arrest and they sort of do time ticking down to the incident. I really liked that because I was like, oh my God, what happened? What did this, how could a 12-year-old kid do something that results in an arrest? I mean, I understand there's things he could do, but I was very curious. Parts two and three are the day by day of dealing with the fallout. And part four was the afterword. The comps listed in the synopsis were The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett and Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed. I didn't get that myself. I saw Happiness Falls by Angie Kim. That was definitely what I saw, in that there is a young boy in the center of it and his family sort of rallying around him. I did like the author's writing style. She gives you the point of view of all the family members, as well as from one of the police officers. So I thought this was a nuanced story. And at the very end, she gives you an author's note that talks about how she was inspired to write this. And I thought that was enlightening. She unpacks generational conflict, expectations, and social class and privilege, as well as police misconduct. I will say it's only about 250 pages, and it took me several days to read, if not over a week, so I would not call this a page-turner. I did switch to audio at one point, and I would not recommend that. I found the narrator doing the female voices to be really distracting and just not solid. And the story was a little heavy-handed for me at times, but I still think it's a worthwhile read that gave me insight into one Indian family's experiences. What I loved were that the characters were nuanced, particularly the parents. And I love that she included a discussion of the roles of the caste system in India and how that sort of extends to families who are Indian who moved to the US. I was sort of fascinated by that. I can see this being a good pick for book club because there's a ton to discuss. Overall, I'm about 3.75 or 4 stars. So I liked it. Wasn't something that I, you know, rushed to give 5 stars, but it was A Great Country by Shilpi Somaiah Gowda.
Okay. Good review. I wondered about that.
I liked it. It just wasn't a barn burner for me.
Sounds really good, the way you set it up.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Sounds really,
I think, a lot of people are really enjoying it, and I liked a lot of it.
Okay. So my next book is Lapvana by Otessa Moshfegh. This is a really hard one to set up. And when I talked about this book with people after I had read it, it was interesting because some people think it's a cult book. Some people just think it's a book set in a medieval village. And I didn't see it as a cult book, but in talking to other readers, apparently some readers do. So it's just kind of one of those ones that you read and you just
choose your own adventure.
I don't know. Yeah, it's like a choose your own adventure. It's definitely, I'll set it up. But anyway, in a drought-stricken medieval village, a troubled shepherd boy becomes entangled in a power struggle between a cruel lord, a mysterious witch-like midwife, and his own father. As famine and desperation take hold, the line between faith and madness blurs in this very dark, very weird, and indescribably unsettling story. This is just a book that is hard to set up. I really appreciated its conversations around religion, greed, and class, and specifically wealth disparity. And I think that's where a lot of readers, I think, are taking that cult aspect of the story. It's also just a really weird book. It has extremely disturbing imagery, if that's something. And it's one of those things that's hard to describe and set up, because if I told you some of the things that happen in this book out of context, I don't know if you'd read it, but I really liked it. So it's full of really mindless and completely unlikable characters. I am unsure if there is a single character I can wholly root for in this one. I personally really enjoyed Moshfegh's ability to input powerful themes alongside the general absurdity of actual things happening in the book. And for that, I'll definitely give her credit. I've read My Year of Rest and Relaxation by this author and now this one, and I personally think that this is a stronger book overall, but they're also both very different. And this one is just harder to recommend in general. I think that if you enjoy strange literary fiction with some pretty yucky imagery, or if you even enjoy horror books or cultish vibes, then you could enjoy this. And that is Lapvana by Otessa Moshfegh.
She's an author I've always been curious about. I can picture this book. Is it a llama that's face down or some sort of animal on the cover?
It's a sheep.
Okay.
Yeah, who's face down and has like a dizzy ring around his head. Yeah, and when I've told people that I've read Lapvana and now My Year of Rest and Relaxation, which are two just totally different books, everyone's been like, just wait until you read Eileen and then you'll get the trifecta because they're all completely different. Mm-hmm. So...
okay, we'll have to check her out.
Okay, I'm next. Okay, here's my excitement. I'm bringing an under-the-radar thriller. It's California Bear by Dwayne Sorzensky. Have either of you heard of this book?
Yes, it was a new release. I've talked about it, but I don't know any... I can't remember what it's about.
Okay, well, I think you'll like it. I think you'll like the sound of it. I am not sure I've read anything quite like this. A witty serial killer thriller that follows four unlikely vigilantes whose decision to take justice into their own hands pits them against the villain behind California's coldest case. Okay, you have Jack Queen, also known as Killer in the story. He has just been exonerated and freed from prison thanks to retired LAPD officer Cato Hightower. But Cato wasn't acting out of the goodness of his heart. The ex-cop has a special job in mind for the ex-con. Then you have the girl detective, who is 15-year-old Matilda, daughter of killer Jack Queen. And she has just been handed a potential death sentence. But that's not going to stop her from tackling the most important mystery of her life. Is her father guilty of murder? And then you have Cato Hightower, the retired LAPD officer with a hidden agenda that just might get them all killed. And finally, you have Jeannie Hightower, Cato's wife, who mends family trees for a living, but the genealogist is unable to repair her own marriage, and her soon-to-be ex may have entangled her in a scheme that has drawn the bloody wrath of the said California Bear, who is a prolific serial killer who disappeared 40 years ago and who now seems to only be emerging from hibernation when the conditions are just right. And this time, the California Bear is not content to hunt in the shadows. If that sounds like a lot, it is a little bit, but you've got to get into the story. I did this on audio. The narration is fantastic. This is fast-paced. It drew me in quickly. I thought the voices in the story were strong. The characterization is really layered. And speaking of characters, there were a lot. There were extras outside of the main four. And it took me some time to orient myself, especially doing this on audio. But... especially doing this on audio, as well as the fact that there are fast-moving parts to this plot. Pay attention is my best advice, and allow the author to take you to some really interesting places. I didn't know what to expect with this, but I have to say, I loved the humor between Jack and Hightower and Jack and his daughter throughout the book. And that was a nice surprise. I didn't expect so much wit and to actually I laughed out loud in a few places. And I did think that the author juxtaposed humor with a very serious look at our society's obsession with and consumption of true crime, while also giving us characters to root for and a chilling serial killer storyline reminiscent of the Golden State Killer. That there's a lot going on in this book. He pulled it off. I really think he pulled it off. Know that you will have to suspend disbelief in parts, but the more I think about this, the more I think that was purposeful on the part of the author. I think he intended to take this story over the top in places. It truly goes off the wall at times. And I found myself saying to myself, this is convoluted. Like, I feel like this is convoluted. And then when I finished, I'm thinking, yeah, I wonder if I was supposed to feel like that. I think that might be the genius of what this author was trying to do. Now, I wasn't sure when I finished how I actually felt. I think it was really smart. I was so surprised where the author took this story. But despite being frustrated at times, there were two main reasons I kept going. The daughter and the father. I love these characters so much. And I don't think this is a run-of-the-mill serial killer thriller. I think there is a lot to like about this story. But here's what I will say. I am so glad I never gave up on this, despite being confused at times. And I have to tell you, you must read the author's note. Read this book, don't give up on it, and then read the author's note at the end. For the audio, he reads it himself. It is so impactful. It made me cry. I cannot remember ever crying about an author's note. And it also illuminated and it shined a huge light on so much of the story that I ended up saying, oh, okay, well done. Now I have a better understanding of what he was trying to do. But I was on my spin bike and I started crying. I had no idea. I did not expect that. This is one that the longer I think about it, the more I like it. It's California Bear by Dwayne Sorzensky.
I'm glad that was a win.
I love a good author's note. I love an author's note.
Same. I do love a good author's note. Sometimes I'm like, gosh, I wish I would have read this beforehand so I had some context going in. But of course, that spoils some of the fun.
You know, I was debating on whether I wish I would have read that first. And I don't think I'm glad I didn't. Because I don't know. I'm just glad I didn't. But I do think it's helpful to know what he's trying to do with this story, which is really take aim, per the publisher, take aim at the true crime industry in Hollywood. And so I wish I would have known that ahead of time, because that would have put, I was thinking, am I on the right track? Is this what he's trying to do? Well, turns out, yes. That is what he was trying to do.
Wow, good job. I mean, both books that I'm not that familiar with. I had definitely never heard of May Luna. All right, I'm going to tell you about the book that I rated 5 stars that I think is definitely for me, but not for everybody. It is The Gunners by Rebecca Kaufman. And this is about Mikey Callahan. He is a 30-year-old who is suffering from the clouded vision of macular degeneration. He struggles to establish human connections, and even his emotional life is a blur. And as the novel begins, he is reconnecting with the Gunners, which is his group of childhood friends. One of their friends has committed suicide, and so they are coming back together as adults to attend her service and then hang out with each other. And Sally had distanced herself from all of them before ending her life, and she died harboring secrets about the group and its individuals. So they're kind of wondering, gosh, how much of what she went through, is any of it our fault? And it turns out all of them sort of think that they have a part in her leaving the group and maybe have a part in her, what she did to herself. And this is the one the StoryGraph recommended to me for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. And I completely see that, because a big strength in that book is the friendship. And you totally get that here. This one has 6 members, including Sally, who's no longer with the group, but you are following the 5 members and sort of, gosh, their battles back and forth. And okay, the first note I have from this book is, nothing is happening, but I love it. And that is very typical for me. So know that going in, if you're up for like a plot-driven story, this is not the one. But if you are into a character-driven experience, I loved this. It explores childhood friendships that reconnect in adulthood, and you get some flashbacks to back when they're kids, which I am very picky about, but she used these very judiciously, and it did not take away from the overall plot or the overall story. And in its present day, they are just a group of friends that are connecting at one of their homes after the funeral, rehashing the old days and updating each other on their lives while drinking. And they're all sort of fixating on what made Sally leave. And you find out they all think they're the reason she left. They all have their reasons. What I love, they in the synopsis, it says they all have secrets that they're hiding. The secrets were juicy. And I hate when the secrets are like something that's so easily explained away or like you just communicate it would have gone away. No, these are pretty good secrets. And this is about how one action can change your entire perception of a person. It's about how everyone is multifaceted and you can't truly know everything about a person no matter how close to them you get. It's a reminder to love the people in your life while they're there with you. And this is probably a very silly reason, but there's a solar eclipse in the story. And I personally was delighted because we just had one. And I love when fictional events are lining up in real life. Overall, I loved this book. I have never read the author, but I'm excited to seek her out again. And this is The Gunners by Rebecca Kaufman.
I also love it when events like that happen in life, or between like real life
and like holidays or even like the month. I'm like, oh, it's also set in June or whatever. I'm like, why is that satisfying? I don't know.
It always happens with about it. Random things too. Like a book that I'm currently reading used a word that I personally hadn't heard before, which was the word palliative. And I work in healthcare and I do a lot of onboardings for our doctors and providers. And one of the onboardings that I was doing recently was for a doctor working in palliative care. And I was like, oh, there's that word again that I heard for the first time. And then again, like a day later.
It's so, the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. That's when you learn something and then all of a sudden you see it everywhere.
It shows up. Yes. And it happens to me all the time. And I love it.
I do
whenever
too.
It happens.
I know. It's a weird thing. All right. We want to bring it home with Shelf Editions.
Yes. So my shelf edition is a foodie novel. It's the Paris novel by Ruth Reichel. This comes out on April 30th. I have read this author's nonfiction books. She has several. I have read Save Me the Plums, and I have read Garlic and Sapphires. I have not read her debut novel, which was Delicious, but this one sounds really good. The Storygraph preview says the Paris novel by Ruth Reichel is a good fit for readers who enjoy stories about self-discovery through travel, art, and food, particularly set in the vibrant and historic city of Paris. This one sounds like it's going to be a mother-daughter story and a little bit of a coming of age in adulthood type of book, which are two things that I really enjoy. So I am excited about this one. That is the Paris novel by Ruth Reichel.
I also read Save Me the Plums. I don't think I realized she wrote fiction.
Yeah, she has one other fiction novel, which was her like debut into fiction. And I also haven't read that one. She wrote it a while ago. It's quite backlist.
All right.
Oh, okay. I'm going to stay on point with my shelf edition.
Okay.
This is Love Letters to a Serial Killer by Tasha Coryell.
Of course it is.
I mean, yes, why not? It comes out June 25th. This is a debut thriller. Boy, this premise. Okay. Recently ghosted and sick of watching her friends fade into the suburbs, 30-something Hannah finds community in a true crime forum that's on a mission to solve the murders of four women in Atlanta. After William, a handsome lawyer, is arrested for the killings, Hannah begins writing him letters. It's the perfect outlet for her pent-up frustration and rage. The exercise empowers her and even feels healthy at first. Okay. Until William writes back. And then Hannah's interest in the case goes from curiosity to obsession. And little by little, nothing else seems to matter in her life. After she loses her job, she heads to Georgia to attend the trial and befriends other true crime junkies like herself. When a fifth woman is discovered murdered, the jury has no choice but to find William not guilty, and Hannah is the first person he calls upon his release. And the two of them quickly end up falling into a routine of domestic bliss. Mm. Well, as blissful as one can feel while secretly investigating their partner for serial murder. This can be really good or really not so great, but I don't know. I'm going to find out. It's Love Letters to a Serial Killer by Tasha Correll.
Sounds right up your alley. Mm-hmm.
That sounds good.
It does. It sounds like it might. I was thinking, oh my gosh, I hope it's as good as Daisy and Chains by Sharon Bolton. But this sounds like it might be lighter. Mm-hmm. Like this sounds like it could have a potential humor, like humorous element to it. I'm not sure, but we'll see.
We shall see. My shelf edition is called If the Tide Turns, and it's the subtitle is a thrilling historical novel of piracy and life after the Salem witch trials. And it's by Rachel Ruckert. And I got this recommendation from the bookseller at Dog Eared Books, who I love. And I don't know her. She's on TikTok. But I love her recommendations. And she was going through the books that are bestsellers at their store. And she says this is one of their bestsellers. And I'd never heard of it. And it is set during the golden age of pirates in the shadowy aftermath of the Salem witch trials, which I did not know there was a golden age for pirates, but apparently so. And it's inspired by the true story of real-life pirate Samuel Bellamy. And so it starts in 1715 in Eastham, Massachusetts, and the daughter of a wealthy family, her name's Maria, has a secure future mapped out for her, yet it's not the future she wants. She's young, headstrong, and restless, and has no desire to marry the aging, mean-spirited John, who is the one that her parents are trying to set her up with. As for what she does want, only one person has ever asked her that question, Samuel Bellamy. Samuel is an orphan sailor looking for work, and he meets Maria by chance. He sort of enchants her with talk of far-flung places and blasphemous ideals, but neither is free from the social order into which they were born. When Sam is banished from Maria's parents' home after asking for her hand, he vows to return a wealthy man, and Maria promises to keep the faith until then. Anyway, I like pirates. I like the idea of women who are in this sort of, you know, forced position due to where they're born in life and the time period they're set in. And I feel like this is a trend, pirates this year. The Ballad of Jacquot de la Haye is a novel that we're going to be reading for one of our upcoming community reads. And I'm sort of leaning into the pirate of it all. This one is If the Tide Turns by Rachel Ruckert.
Tina, I'm excited that you brought that one. I actually have a personal connection with the author. She's really, really sweet.
Nice. I saw you react, and I wasn't sure if it was to the bookseller or if it was the author. Oh, that's fun.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Super fun.
Cool. Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, I start. Stupid.
Yeah.
Hello. Go ahead, Renee.
We're just sitting here waiting for Tina.
I'm like, guys. Okay. That's it for today. We thank you for spending a part of your day with us. Links to all the books mentioned can be found in the show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can help us by following wherever you listen and by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get our show out to new listeners and grows our audience. And don't forget, if you would like access to exclusive bonus content and community, you can join us for $5 a month on patreon.com/booktalketc.
If you'd like to connect with us, email us at booktalketc@gmail.com. You can also connect with us at booktalketc on Instagram, Tina at TBR, etc., me, Renee at It's Book Talk, and Hannah at Handpick Books. Talk to you next week. In the meantime, remember,
everything's better with books.
John's already at work. He texted me. I think it's their dog.
He is?
Yes.
It has to be Grace.
Do you hear all that?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to wrap it. Okay. Anyway, he's a pirate and he wants to marry this lady. Okay.